The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
The Soul of Jefferson.
This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler.
We are here with Jefferson State of Mind, broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios. 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, we are your talk radio. And we're streaming live at KCNR1460.com. That's KCNR1460.com. And we archive forever.
And ever. Amen.
We do. And you can get our archive, as a matter of fact, 5 minutes after this program is over. So, Janet, you had a quick announcement before we get to our guest?
Yes. I want to give a shout-out of support to Steve and Sherry Amaral, who are up in Bernie doing canvassing, campaigning for Clint Curtis. Mm-hmm. So if you see them out there with flyers and campaign information, say hello, grab a card, and be ready to vote for Clint Curtis.
And so what do we have out there as far as weather?
Well, it's beautiful. It's cold in the morning, but, you know, 20s, high 20s. But it's
fresh air.
Fresh air, pine tree scented, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anyway, we have a special guest today. It's Mark Moser. He's an attorney at the Dillon Law Firm. His practices encompass constitutional law, educational, and very educational in the Constitution. If you ever listen to him, election law, political law, and civil rights. He's ran for the Secretary of State in 2018 and the U.S. Senate in 2022. And Mark also has been involved with 4 cases before the Supreme Court of the United States. And he's an avid bike rider. In fact, Mark, when I talked to you yesterday, you just gotten back from, what, a 48-mile bicycle ride?
Yeah, just a short little ride.
Anyway, my friend, you're going to give us the update. You are the lead attorney for the Dillon Law Firm when it comes to the hopefully reversal of Prop 50. And where does that stand now? And give us a little bit of background on that and possibly where you think it's going. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yes, Proposition 50. Anybody who's been following it knows that there have been multiple lawsuits against Prop 50. The one that I am currently working right now is before the United States Supreme Court. And what that particular case is we are asking for an injunction. And an injunction is an order from the court telling the state you cannot use Proposition 50 maps during the 2026 election cycle pending the, pending the outcome of the case, because it's going to take months, if not years, to fully litigate the case. There's a lot of discovery that needs to be done, i.e. statements and intent of the map maker, what the legislature knew and all that kind of stuff. And because the case cannot be fully litigated before the 2026 elections, we're asking, the court to enter an injunction. And so this case started in front of a 3-judge panel out of Los Angeles. That trial, or the hearing for the preliminary injunction, was heard December 15th through the 17th. And then about 2 weeks ago, that court finally reached a decision. It was a 2-1 decision. They denied the injunction. And so we then immediately filed before the United States Supreme Court an application for an emergency injunction pending the appeal of the case. And the Supreme Court required the state to file their objection, and that was due last Thursday, and they filed that. And then on Friday, we filed the final response, which is called a reply, and the matter is submitted to the court. And it's not something that's going to have oral arguments. It will be something that the court enters a decision. We think that the court will rule sometime between Monday to Wednesday, but they have till the 9th to enter a decision. And what's so important about the 9th is the 9th is the first day that candidates can go out there and pull the paperwork to officially be on the ballot. And due to a bunch of Supreme Court precedents, that is the date by which if you do not have a court order, federal courts are not allowed to change the rules of an election. And so we are asking the court to rule by February 9th to issue an injunction telling the state you cannot use Prop 50 maps.
And what is just for clarity, what is the basis of your objection? What's the basis of the objection? I mean, I can think of a bunch of them, but what's the official one?
Ultimately, it is that this is a racial
gerrymander. Right.
The thing is, political gerrymanders, the Supreme Court has ruled, states are allowed to do political gerrymanders. In fact, you know, we probably have all heard of Albert's Gerry. But if you want to go back even further in time, the very first election for Congress, there was a guy named Patrick Henry who did not like a guy named James Madison. And so Patrick Henry happened to be the governor of Virginia at that time, and Patrick Henry wanted to make sure that we did not have a Bill of Rights, because what he wanted to do was set up a second constitutional convention, and if he could get a second constitutional convention, he was going to totally rework the Constitution, because he did not like the Madison plan, the federalism. He wanted the states to have a whole lot more power. And so Patrick Henry, as a part of his plan to get a second constitutional convention, decided that he had to take James Madison out. And so he gerrymandered, although it wasn't called gerrymander at that time, he drew a district that was guaranteed that James Madison could not win. And James Madison happened to win. He just was a very good campaigner. He won. We got the Bill of Rights, and it scuttled all talk about a second constitutional convention, and Patrick Henry had to take it on the chin and lost to James Madison. So the history is the redistricting is a very political thing. And as such, federal courts do not have jurisdiction to tell a state, oh, you're being too political or not too political. However, we have the thing called the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law. Mm-hmm. And we are supposed to live in what's called a colorblind society. We are not supposed to, the legislatures are not supposed to pass laws that benefit one group because of their race. And during the campaign for Prop 50, Paul Mitchell, the map maker, came out and made some statements about how the first thing he did was draw this Latino district in the gateway cities in Los Angeles County. And then he came out and said, hey, you know, Latinos are going to really like these districts in the Central Valley because I bolstered them so that they could win. Mm. And you know, Mike McGuire, president pro tem of the Senate, he came out with a press release and said, these districts expand the Voting Rights Act districts for Hispanics. Well, that's nice, but in order to draw a Voting Rights Act district, what a Voting Rights Act district is a district that is drawn specifically to help help a minority community. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, you have to pass a three-part test. And one of the things is you have to have a white majority. Well, there is no white majority in the state of California. So the fact that you're drawing districts to help the majority, or not the majority, the plurality. Hispanics are the plurality in the state of California. So the fact that you are drawing districts specifically to help a plurality, you're using their race, you failed the test, and I mean, and there was like three elements of this test, and they fail all three of the elements. It's just, it's, there is absolutely no reason in California that, you know, they just fail on every level. You're not supposed to be drawing congressional districts based upon race, yet Mike McGuire came out and said that they were doing it, the mapmaker said that they were doing it, and so because lines were drawn as the basis of race, our whole evidence to the district court and now to the Supreme Court is all this evidence of where, both direct and indirect, where they are using race to draw district lines, and our argument is that evidence is so overwhelming, courts, you should not allow unconstitutional maps to be run on the 2026 election, enter an injunction, and let's revert back to the maps drawn by the commission. Now, after the court rules, whether they give us an injunction or don't give us an injunction, we're back in front of the district court. We'll be going and getting discovery, and we'll continue to litigate this matter because just because we decide what's going to happen in 2026 doesn't mean that that's what happens in 2028 or 2030.
Okay, this doesn't get bounced back to the three-judge panel. It goes to a specific judge?
No, it's a three-judge panel.
It'll be bounced back to them. Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, because this is congressional districts.
Correct.
There is a special law that Congress says there's no one judge who's ever allowed to make a decision regarding these. It goes to what's called a special three-judge panel.
Yes.
And that's what we're in front of in Los Angeles County.
Yes. Okay, so... And en banc has nothing to do with this because of the fact that it was a 2-1, you know, that was a 2-1 verdict. So, but it's nice to know that because of the three-judge panel, your appellate process would be to the Supreme Court. The question
yeah, these congressional district races do not go through the circuit courts.
Correct.
It's this district three-judge panel takes straight to the Supreme Court.
Correct. Okay, so... the other question I've got is that, you know, it seems to me like, you know, in looking at this, going to the Supreme Court, hopefully it's justice and, you know, some of these Supreme Court justices aren't looking for political capital in this whole thing. This is really, let's hope it's constitutional and not political. Anyway, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, we have done everything we can, you know, personally. All the month of August, September, October, all the way through until this last Friday, this is pretty much the only thing that I have done. I, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I go, like to do Ironmans. I gave up two Ironmans this fall. You know, was gonna run for office. I had to give that up, you know, just to put all my efforts into this Prop 50 because it was so, devious and devastating to the state of California. I had to just put all my efforts in. Our firm put all of their efforts into this case. And at the end of the day, I believe the law is in our favor. But the thing is, with these emergency injunctions to the Supreme Court, it comes from a law that's called the All Writs Act that gives the Supreme Court this power. But they have made it abundantly clear that this power is to be very rarely used. And from my research, it has only been done 6 times. 5 of them were done during COVID. So it is for the Supreme Court to issue an injunction is not a normal remedy. And so what we might see the court do is they just say, yes, this looks like it's you may be right, but we don't think that this is the circumstances in which we should be issuing an injunction. We've never granted an injunction in a redistricting case, and we don't feel like this should be the first one, because anybody who understands John Roberts, the Chief Justice,
yeah.
understands that he really does, wants the Supreme Court to get out of redistricting. Mm-hmm. He was the one who kind of led the charge to get the Supreme Court out of political redistricting, and there's a lot of people who think that he wants to, them to get out of racial redistricting. He wants to try to limit it to a point where the courts are just not having to deal with these issues. He thinks this is something that Congress should be doing, not the courts. And so there could be some strong resistance from Chief Justice Roberts that says, yeah, you know, Mark, you have a really good case. You've made your case. But I really don't think the Supreme Court needs to be in the middle, you know, be calling the balls and strikes of redistricting. You know, Mike Johnson and the House of Representatives needs to step up and start, you know, cleaning up all these problems, and I hate cleaning it up. So, you know, if Justice Roberts looks at it from the law, I think we win. But there just, you know, there's some aspect of separation of powers going on that Justice Roberts just does not want the Supreme Court to be dealing with this. There's some, a couple very important cases that are kind of coming down this year, where there are many people who think that Justice Roberts is going to be really cleaning up, when you can bring cases, challenging redistricting and stuff like that. One of them is the Palais case, which is in Louisiana. And so, you know, there's going to, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, separations of power, this is really something that Congress can and should take care of, but they've just kind of left it to the states. And, you know, the law is on our side. It's just whether or not the Supreme Court wants to exercise its unusual and rarely used power to grant an injunction.
So they actually do have some jurisdiction over this, but it's whether or not they want to basically adhere to that.
Yes. Well, they have the jurisdiction.
Right.
But it's kind of an optional jurisdiction. It's not a required jurisdiction.
Gotcha.
So it's something that they have permissive jurisdiction to deal with, but, you know, once you open the floodgate, everybody wants to do it, and it's like, so they're, you know, it's like COVID. During COVID, John Roberts, you know, denied 3 or 4 appeals to the Supreme Court before he finally granted one. And then, you know, they ended up granting 4 more, and then they denied pretty much everything after that. So we had multiple appeals to the Supreme Court asking for injunctions pending appeal before the Supreme Court. We happened to win, I think we won 3 or 4 of those cases during COVID, but we also lost several. We had one that was before they decided to grant it, and we had one regarding free speech at the Capitol that came after this group of injunctions were issued. So whatever, you know, there's no guarantee that we'll get it, but if they look at it on the basis of law, I think we are very optimistic.
Yeah, you know, you made a great comment to me yesterday when we were talking on the phone. I thought that it really holds water with what we're talking about now, and that is that, you know, the Supreme Court, you know, sometimes they're, again, looking at it in the view of the law, like you're saying, and at other times they're maybe viewing it somewhat in political capital. And I think that hopefully they do follow the law. And I know, I mean, it's hard to ask you what your chances are, because you sort of answered that when you said you did everything you could. Okay, so pretty much that's really where we stand. If in fact this doesn't really go our way, how does that really look as far as the districts go, and how does that really look as far as, you know, the ballots? How does that really look? I mean, you're voting for someone for a district that you're in at the present time. For example, we have, as you know, we lost Doug LaMalta. And when Doug passed away, James is running for that term, the interim term for District 1. But Shasta County, if all this goes through, we will be in District 2 rather than District 1. And when does this all come into effect, or would it come into effect?
Okay, so the current districts are valid through, I think, January 3rd or 4th of 2027.
Okay.
So what you talk about is CD1 and James Gallagher running for the remainder of Doug LaMoffa's term.
True.
So those people in Shasta, everybody during this, there's going to be a special election on the June primary date where you will be voting for the remainder of Doug's term.
No, August. He put it off to August. He had it. He could go 100.
No. There's a June, and then August. August is the general. June is the primary.
Okay.
So you got two primaries on the June. I think it's the June 2nd ballot.
Okay.
Then, you know, if one candidate gets 50% in June, they immediately go to Congress.
Right.
But if they don't, then the runoff or the general election is the August date.
Okay, that's the way we understood it and the way we read it was that in August, the there would be a special election for the remainder of Doug LaMalta's seat, and that's the issue I believe we're talking about in August. That was the way I understand it. I mean, when I talked to James, that's the way I understand it. So when, so in essence, that remainder portion, we don't get to vote on that until August for a special election. And I forget the code. I have it written down somewhere, but the code does say that.
I could go back and look at it, but when I thought what I understood, that what the governor does is he appoints the general election date, and he could have appointed that in June, which would have meant we would have had an April primary or top two primary, but he chose the August date, which meant June was the top two primary date. I could be wrong. I can go back and look at it, but that's my understanding is that August is, for all intents and purposes, the runoff date, which is the date that the governor, when the governor appoints a date, that was the date that he chose, was the August date, whereas it could have been he could have chosen the June date as the runoff election date.
I think what we have been told and what we believe to be the case is that to complete Doug LaMalfa's term that ends in January of 27, that election will take place in August. The primary will be to determine the candidates who will have the new term, which will begin in January 27.
Okay. June 2nd, we'll start with this. June 2nd is going to be the top two primary for the 2027-2028 term. Do we agree with that?
Yes.
And then the top two candidates move forward to the November ballot.
Correct.
But we're filling a vacancy. That's what this is.
I understand that.
Okay, go ahead.
Now,
go ahead.
And I'm literally pulling these calendar dates up as we speak.
Sure, great.
Because what I understand is the August date is the date that you vote to replace replace Doug LaMalfa.
True.
But that is the runoff date. You go forward to the June 2nd date where there is a primary, and the top two candidates on the June 2nd date will be on the ballot in August, and the winner of that race forward.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha. Now I understand.
Okay. So they had to have a primary and a runoff for that special election. That's what you're saying?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay, that has not been made clear to the voters all.
Thank you, Mark. You made it clear, buddy.
Well, I hope I'm making it clear, but
clear as mud.
Clear as mud, buddy. Anyway,
but that being said, part of that law is if one candidate gets over 50% in that special primary election on June 2nd, and yes, I am looking at the Secretary of State, I am correct on this.
Okay.
So on June 2nd, there is a special primary election. If a candidate gets 50%, they are immediately sworn in and go and do the term. If no candidate gets 50%, we go to the August 4th date where the top vote getter will then go to Congress.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And that
so
makes sense.
So on June 2nd, you're going to actually have two primary elections
right.
in Shasta County.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have one for CD1
mm-hmm.
and one for CD2.
Mm-hmm.
And the one for CD1 will be for the... unless, of course, I get this injunction, okay? So we're really trying to mess everything up here. But to the best of, if I do not win this election, you're going to be voting for both CD1 and CD2. CD1 will be Doug's old seat and will be for the remainder of the term. If it gets 50%, the winner will immediately be sworn in and go to Congress. If no candidate gets 50%, then it goes to the August 4th election date. There will also be CD2, which is the new district that will take place on starting January 3rd, and that will be the what I call the broken Tetris piece that goes clear down to Marin County, clear up to, what is it, you know.
MODOC.
Yep. MODOC. Yeah, MODOC. That's what I thought. I went clear up to MODOC.
That's where we are, in Shasta County's in the new district, too. Jared Huffman from Marin County.
So that CD2, the new CD2, or one, or whatever number it is, I'm losing track here. But
The new two.
The top two from that race will be on your November ballot with the winner in November being sworn in Congress. So, clear as mud. I hope I didn't
you did great.
Everybody
you did great.
What could possibly go wrong?
Anyway,
so vote for me for one, vote for me for two.
Yeah, there you go.
We have to go off to our break. Do you want to stay over, or it's up to you, my friend?
Is there anything that I could do to confuse the people anymore?
I think you pretty well covered it, honestly. You probably want to go ride your bike.
It's up to you. If you need me more, I'll try to confuse everybody a little bit more.
Yeah, why don't you stay on for a little bit longer after the break. So we'll take our break here, and we'll be back with Mark Moser. Time has come.
For 51.
And we're going to get it done.
Amen.
Sun and endless tan where the fires blaze across the land. Governor Gavin's got a plan, but it's as clear as beachside sand. Oh, California's burning bright, but Gavin's dancing in the light. Shimmy, shimmy, watch him go. Leadership. Just for show.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Mandina's Cabinets. The local pros.
Mandina's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match. They are the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets. The local pros who know. Mandina's Cabinets. The local pros.
530-365-8108 or visit mandinascabinets.com.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavors. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
At Stiefel Nicholas,
I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with department staff with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is financial advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Every morning at the office, you can see him arrive. He stands 6'2" and weighs 195. Now, some don't like him. Some think he's hip. But all agree he gives a lot of lip. Big Don.
Big Don. Big Don.
Big Bad Don. The Donald.
Big Don.
Now, it's no secret where the money...
Okay. We're back. And we are with the master of clarity, Mark Moser.
Hey, Mark, real quick. Okay, June is the primary. What is the race called that's going to be held in August? Is there a title for that?
It's called the Special General Election.
Special General Election. Okay. Because then that way we're talking apples to apples when we're talking to people about it. And then we have our general election in November.
Yes. So you have the special primary election on June 2nd. You have our regular primary election on June 2nd. You have the special general election on August 4th, and then you have the general election on November, whatever the date is. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
I don't know why this is so confusing. I mean, for goodness sake.
Unless you win the case, Mark.
Unless I win the case.
Now, is that going to be the first Tuesday again still? It'll be, if that's the case, it'll be the first Tuesday of November, correct?
Well, if I win the case, we've still got the special primary election and the regular primary election on June 2nd.
Yes.
It's just that the CD1 would be, you'd be voting on CD1 twice versus voting for CD1 and CD2.
Right, right. Well, we had a similar thing happen here in Shasta County a couple years back where some constituents didn't get to vote in an area and then others got to vote twice. And it was what was happening on there was it was the redistricting, I think.
It was.
It was going over here on the west side of town.
Right.
The county. And it was weird because people didn't understand what was going on and it wasn't made abundantly clear. And that was the former ROV and her minions that were running that. So it was kind of a cluster. But, okay, so just for clarity, it's always on the first Tuesday of the month in November, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that'll be November
3rd. Well, let me rephrase. It's the first Tuesday of the month after the first Monday of the month.
Oh, that's true. Yes, yes, you have. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay.
So
yes.
It's basically all the election in November is always going to be between November 2nd and November 8th.
Yes, 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 because it has to follow that Monday.
It
That's
does.
Correct. Yep. Okay, so we're going to have June 2nd for the primary, August 4th for the special general election, and then November 3rd for the general election.
Sounds good.
How hard could that be? Yes, we'll find
it
out.
It sounds like there's going to be a lot of attention paid to you guys over the next couple months.
Bring it on.
And I find it interesting that Mike McGuire is talking about voting rights for Hispanics because I think the new District 1 was created just to favor him.
Uh-huh. Isn't that special?
For political purposes, he didn't do it, the Hispanic population is very low in Northern California. Whatever he did racially, he did it in other parts of the state so that way he could politically gerrymander this Northern California and deprive Northern California of a representative who actually knows and understands the issues that go on in Northern California.
Exactly.
Amen.
So if the Democrats do get their way in Northern California, District 1 will be ruled by Mike McGuire and District 2 will be ruled by Jared Huffman, neither of which are actually from Northern California.
Unfortunately, that is what we're dealing with right now. And the, you know, one of the problems that we have is there are a lot of voters in the state of California who just have given up on politics or do not care about politics, and they allow special interests to control their interest because they don't take the time to educate themselves and they don't take the time to vote. As someone who's very active in politics, it is very frustrating to me to see the number of common sense voters who just don't come out and vote because they think that the election is already decided. And I can tell you that in 2022, when I ran for U.S. Senate, the number of common sense voters, had they simply showed up and voted in California, we would not be having this conversation right now because I'd be in Washington, D.C. as your United States Senator. California is not as blue as everybody thinks it is. It is blue because too many voters stay home and do not participate. Prop 50 is an excellent example of it. Roughly, the state of California has 40 million people. I think it's about 30 million of them are eligible to vote. 7 million of them voted for Prop 50. That means there are like 23 million Californians who chose, well, who either voted no on this or chose not to show up to the polls because they thought it was a foregone conclusion. I don't mean to degrade anybody's math skills, but 23 million is greater than 7 million.
Amen, brother.
You know, we had in Northern California, we had 11 counties that are contiguous up here, Shasta County, Siskiyou County, Modoc County, Plumas County, et cetera, Butte County. We voted 70%, almost 70%, no on Prop 50. And then when you look at even just one county like Santa Clara County that's 83% Democrat, their votes alone wiped out every vote we have up here. We just don't have representation in the northern counties. We just don't. And people did get out and vote. We pushed it hard. I think we were almost 70% here. And I know Tehama County was 70%. But, I mean, it seems as if when we try to do something up here in rural California, we don't have any representation. And you know this. We've talked about this for years, you and I. We used to have one senator per county. Now we don't have that anymore. We don't have any representation whatsoever. So I don't really know where the fix is. I know James Gallagher's idea to split California was sort of a. I kind of want to get your take on that. He wants to split California because he understands that there is no representation. I didn't agree 100% with his state split, and I talked to him. In fact, I was on a trip during my anniversary. And James called me, and we were at a hotel in Fortuna, and we talked about this. I mean, his idea of splitting California right down the middle, whether you like that or not, or whether you think that the lines are drawn right or not, the point is that he's gotten 8 other assembly people to agree with him that we just can't get representation unless we split the state. What do you think about that?
Well, as somebody who studies a lot of history, I could tell you that no sooner was the state of California made a state, then the debate started on whether or not we should split the state of California into 2 or 3. This has been a debate that has been going on for well over 150 years. And it's one of the things is it's very troubling what is going on. I think the Supreme Court back in, I think it was in the 60s, was the case of Reynolds versus Sims, really actually devastated a lot of rural communities, and if I could ever figure out a way to get that back in front of the Supreme Court, that would probably have a better, or it would be a more quicker remedy than flitting the state, which is, you have to go, there's so many steps and so many political stuff, I just don't know that the political will to split California is there. It's been a long time since we split a state. I believe that was during the Civil War.
Yeah. West Virginia.
Yep.
From Virginia.
So,
And I think the thing that's really, but I think the point of it is that it's the first time we've actually had an assemblyman come out with the backing, of other people in the assembly wanting to put forth a resolution to get that in front of the Assembly of California to split the state is the only remedy they can come up with. I mean, arguably, yeah. James Gallagher is the most popular Republican in the state when it comes to state politics. And, so I just found that to be interesting. And I think you're right about what you're saying with Reynolds versus Sims. In fact, Chief Justice, Clarence Thomas.
Thomas, yeah.
Thomas wants to, has mentioned that he'd love to get that in front of him. He's mentioned that.
Well, we did have a lawsuit that tried to get it to the Supreme Court, and we couldn't get it through the federal courts. Thank you, Judge Kimberly Mueller.
Yeah, well,
she denied it unfoundedly, so she didn't even deny it on its merit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in history, and I think you probably know this, Mark, but in history, a three-judge panel was appointed by Judge Mueller.
Right.
It had never been reversed before. She reversed her own situation, saying no, that she didn't want a three-judge panel, that we weren't going to have one. Within 5 days, she changed her mind, and I guess there was, according to a couple of people that we had as attorneys, it seems as if she did that. It had never been done before.
And she was speaking to people about the case.
Speaking to people about the case.
Yeah, which is a no-no.
Other judges.
Yeah, which is a no-no.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, quick question. What do you think the chances of the 2A case are here in California that we've got going here, Mark Baird's got going? What do you think about that?
I am going to plead the fifth. I have been so focused in on Prop 50 for the last 6 months that my situational awareness of other cases going on in the nation is to a degree that if I speak, I'm going to sound more ignorant. I may actually be able to expound somewhat on them, but I just, Prop 50 has been my sole focus it'd be better that I allow you to talk to others about it who have been following it a little bit more closely than I have.
Right, and okay. I can attest to that, because when I talked to you a couple of weeks ago, we were talking, and you said I'd love to come on the program, but you're going to have to probably call me the Saturday before, because I'm so slammed with this case. And in actuality, I called you yesterday,
right?
And you're on today. Anyway,
friend, I appreciate that answer to that question, because it's important, and because we are in the midst of it. Especially Mark Baird is up to his flipping eyeballs and our eyebrows in it. But I appreciate your response to that. That's fair. Thank you.
Anyway, my friend.
Yeah, I usually when it comes to constitutional law cases in the state of California. Usually that question I would have been fully capable of answering, but I will be honest, I have not been following the constitutional cases of California this last 6 months like I normally do.
Well, when you come up for air, I'll fill you in. But anyway.
I must put in a short anecdote about Mr. Mosier. Several years ago, he came to our Tea Party Patriots meeting.
And on his bicycle.
Yeah, running for office.
Yeah.
And I always, of every candidate, I ask a question about the Constitution, and without fail, they all fail to answer the question correctly until Mark Mosier was there.
That's right.
And he could not only answer the question about the Constitution correctly, he could tell you what every article and every amendment was.
Yes.
So congratulations, Mr. Mosier.
Thank you.
I hesitate to ask what the question was, because I might fail today.
Oh, no, you would know it. They were really very basic. I was not giving...
Basic.
I was not giving law school questions.
Oh, okay.
Well, they don't teach the Constitution in law school.
What does the third article of the Constitution deal with?
Right.
I'd be the obnoxious little kid who has his hands waving that the teacher is looking at everybody else to try to figure out who.
Yeah.
Anyway, my friend, I sure thank you for coming on, and
we'll
be in
you.
Touch. And again, folks, Mark Moser, thank you, sir, for what you're doing. Godspeed on getting this done for all of us. Thanks again.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank
you.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
And just a general reminder to everybody, okay, what Mark was saying, too, June 2nd is the primary, August 4th is the special general election, and November 3rd is the general election. So let's kind of commit that to memory.
Well, actually, June 2nd is the general primary and the special primary. Two that different elections taking place.
I stand corrected. Two elections.
And August 4th is the special I wrote it down.
You know, I understood it halfway through this program. Now you guys are confusing me all over.
August 4th is the special general election.
There we go.
And then November 2nd, 3rd is the
general election.
Okay.
So we have the general primary, the special primary in June.
Yes.
Special general election in August, and then the general election in November.
And those are the general specifics, right?
Generally.
Special. We're all special.
Yeah, you know, there's so many things going on around here locally, too. Darren Hale out there and Anderson, the city councilman, has been bringing to light that we are training Chinese pilots here in Anderson, California at the airport.
And have been for years.
You know, and I talked to Mark Baird about it, and he said that probably over half the Chinese pilots that are trained in the United States.
Yes.
I mean,
What could go wrong with that?
And who approved this?
Yeah.
Where did somebody say, yeah, that'd be a good idea to bring all of these Chinese people over here to learn how to fly?
I'm guessing money has something to do with it.
And have access to airspace and maps become familiar with the area.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Shasta Dam.
Why don't they, next thing they're going to be sending balloons over our territory.
Oh, wait, didn't they do that?
Yeah, I think
Maybe they did.
Didn't that already happen?
No.
And then they knock it out of the sky when it's out over the ocean.
Yeah, gets to South Carolina, then we put it down.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was in communication with Darren yesterday, and we'll get him on the show pretty soon. Hopefully we'll be able to get some things happening here with the election, too. I guess that Mike Gallagher has thrown his hat into the ring for District 5. So that means there's Gary Oxley, there's Mike Gallagher, there's Chris Kellstrom, and there's Tim Garmin. So there's four of them running.
Which will almost guarantee a
November
runoff. Yeah.
And then I guess in District 1, it's Aaron Reznor, Rich Gallardo, and Kevin Cry.
Again, which could guarantee a
another runoff.
Or, it depends. I mean, it depends on in that election with Kevin Cry and Aaron Reznor last time, if those numbers were legit or not. With having Clint Curtis running the show, we know we're going to get legit numbers. So Kevin could have won by more votes than he actually did, but we just don't know how that whole thing's going to shake down. As far as what we have with our Board of Supervisors now, I think one of the things we have to start asking is, with each one of them, especially the incumbents, what is it you've accomplished? And not that you voted on yes or you had a situation where you wanted to vote on something, but more of a situation where, you were the one who brought this whole thing up. We have Andrew on the line. Andrew, sir, how are you?
Oh, good morning, gang. Hey, I was educated in Napa Valley in high school in the 70s. Japan Airlines at the local airport in Napa was training Japan Airlines students. I go, it was really close to World War II. It's only a few years. And I go, this is wrong. And recently I'm hearing about the Chinese students being taught here. I can't afford lessons. Who's paying for this? And number two, they're all going into the military. These are military-trained pilots. They need to get, the lay of the land, like Janet said, the maps and so forth. And also, how the hell stick and rudder. This is... I'm going to say treason.
Oh, Andrew, you sound like such a conspiracy theorist. Come on.
And I'm wearing aluminum foil.
Well, it's who's receiving the money is what I'd be concerned about. Who's receiving the money?
Yeah.
That'd be my question, Andrew. I mean, who's getting the money for this? Where does that money go, and who's getting it?
We know where the money's coming from. Yeah. Where is it going to?
Yeah, where's it going to?
For the Chi-Coms.
Yes.
Yes.
So, but who in the United States is benefiting? Follow the money.
Yeah, or what city?
Well, Okay, so the school is receiving the money, is it not?
Yes, but who gave permission for us, somebody, to train Chinese pilots?
Could it have been one of our CHICOM legislatures who made this possible?
Or further up the ladder, who knows?
Yeah, anyway.
Or further down the ladder, because, you know, if this deal is, if they're making a deal, and the airport's in Anderson, they're making the deal, who gets the money? Okay, who gets, and the one last thing I want to say, and then you can go ahead, Andrew, is that...
I understand it's just 9 pilots in Anderson, but there are other bases throughout the country.
Right, so there's some legality to it. That was what I was getting to. In other words, the legality to do this is already there. The question is who receives the money, the benefit of the money, who receives that as far as from those lessons. Does the city receive it? Does the county receive it? Does the state receive it?
Yes.
That's my question.
Right. On all 3 levels.
Or all 3 levels. So all of them get a piece of the action.
One more comment. Do you know the average IQ of the average Somalian? Does anybody know?
I don't know, 78, I think.
I think it's 64 to 83.
That would sound right. And we're not being facetious or rude here. That's just
Is that higher than Biden's?
Well, now. I'm not sure he has an IQ now.
Yeah, I don't know that he's on the planet.
He's in the planet.
Yeah. I had a point, and it just escaped me. With the Somalis, the culture there is to get over on government because, you know, to steal and take, because that's the only way of life they know. They're not assimilating.
And they are helping their families by stealing money from somebody else. So to them, it's a cultural family support thing.
Sure, I get
it's
that.
It's not wrong to them. It's good because you are bringing money into your clan.
Correct. Anyway, I'll let you guys go. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Right, brother. Thank you so much, as always. Yeah. You know, I think that we really have had so many issues here in this county. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who's not upset about the sheriff putting up those license plate readers in the county. I mean, everybody.
I've got one on that. It's been found out recently that in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, people who are the protesters have access to the information, the data from the license plate readers within the police department. Somebody's feeding them the information, and they are using the license plate data to go out and harass ICE workers and people who are against the protesters. So, you know, what could go wrong?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, to be naive enough to think that there isn't an opportunity for something like that to be nefarious.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be that naive. I mean, you know, I've been told, well, it's Amber Alerts. I mean, how many of those have you seen in the last 10 years, too?
Yeah.
You know, seriously, I mean, I had one gentleman who has a private driveway. It's right outside his private driveway, and he's fit to be tied. And he's a prominent businessman here in town. And it's just, I mean, really and truly, how do you even vote for that? Why would you even spend the money on that?
Well, then let's go to a bigger thing is the AB 1421, the new mileage tax.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
Every single Democrat voted yes on that. Every single one of them. Keep that in mind. Every single one of them voted yes on that for here in California.
And that
for
is
this
not,
tax.
That is not in lieu of gasoline tax.
No, it's
that
not.
Is
it's
in
on top
addition
of
to.
Anywhere from 6 to 9 cents per mile.
And how do they
mile.
Get their information? I guess through the DMV.
Yep.
When you register your car.
And you get smogged and everything. Yeah.
That's right.
The annual events when you go to DMV, but then also they add it to it with when you're getting smogged. They double check on that when you're doing it every 2 years. So there you go, right there.
Even my insurance company has access to my mileage when I get my oil changed.
Yeah, well, we have
reported.
Right, well, we have to, you know, Wynn had said this, we were talking this week, and he made a good point. He said, you know, we just have to stand up. We have to stop California. We have to stop them from what they're doing. You know,
did anybody watch Bug's Life? You know, all those grasshoppers were scared of the ants. They got scared because there were more ants than there were grasshoppers. So, come on, folks. It's time to do it.
Well, with those words of wisdom.
I think it's time to go.
Oh, boy. Well, another episode of
chaos.
Well, of Jefferson State of Mind, aka the No BS Zone. That's the new one, the No BS Zone, and time has come
for 51.
And an informed society is a free society.
Amen.
Let's get her done, kid.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.